G'day listeners. Today on Emerging Cricket, we're joined by Mark Young, who's working with New Zealand's volunteer service abroad in Timor-Leste. How's it going, Mark?
It's good, Nick. It's good. Nice to catch up.
So let's start a bit about your story and how did you sort of come to be involved with East Timor and with the cricket scene over there?
It kind of probably goes back to my childhood, so hopefully I won't make this a long answer, but basically I was born and brought up in Lancashire, England, and spent my formative years with my dad watching cricketing greats like Clive Lloyd and Farooq Engineer playing at Old Trafford in the 70s. And I've been a cricket tragic all my life, playing, coaching and administrating in the UK and New Zealand, where I've lived for the last 21 years. Pretty average club cricketer, Nick, to be honest. But, you know, I tried hard, played some league cricket in England and a lot of vintage cricket in New Zealand, which is a nice way of putting it for old blokes cricket in New Zealand. And but it's been a big part of my life and I've made a lot of friends through it. So, and when I've not been doing cricket stuff, I've worked in the IT business for many years, various management roles. And in recent years, I've had my own consulting business in New Zealand, which has actually allowed me to take up my BSA role in Timor, which is advising their government on attracting foreign investment. So when we got the job, the voluntary job, we actually had to look Timor up on the map, I'll be honest, to see where it was. But me and my partner, Lara, have been here now for over 12 months. And, you know, it's had its challenges, but an absolutely amazing experience. And we just love Timor and the Timorese people. So that's kind of a bit of background on me and how I got to Timor. But as regards to cricket, when I came here, being a cricket tragic, you know, it kind of was in the back of my mind, but nothing really happened until one day, probably in the middle of last year, I was walking to work and noticed a few young Timorese playing cricket with homemade bats and homemade stumps, right, on the seafront at Dili, which is the capital here. So, you know, being the cricket tragic, went over, had a chat with them, and discovered there was a Pakistani dentist, Tayyab, living in Timor with his Timorese wife, who'd started introducing the game into schools a couple of years earlier. So,
No, just off his own sort of initiative.
Yeah, it seemed to be, yeah. Just sort of off his own bat. His wife is a sort of Timorese athlete, and she ran in the, I think she ran in the marathon at Beijing, actually, the first Timorese athlete, female athlete, to run at Olympic Games. Anyway, so she's very passionate about Timor and getting young Timorese into a sport. Tayyab loves his cricket, so I guess it all went from there, really. And so I couldn't believe it. I saw these homemade bats and stumps. The bat was the heaviest bat I've ever picked up, and it certainly wasn't made of willow. I don't know what it was made of, and the width was probably the same width as the three stumps, so it's kind of probably totally illegal. But it was kind of it was quite funny, really. But that's kind of how it started in terms of me getting involved in cricket here.
And so what do you, I guess, specifically do with cricket? So you've seen these guys down on the beach and thought you wanted to get involved, and so now what are you up to?
Yeah, so Tayyab, sort of linked up with Tayyab, and we're both advisors to the Timor-Leste Cricket Federation, which actually does exist. It was set up in 2016, and I guess we're just working together to develop cricket in Timor. I mean, I help with the coaching because I've done a fair bit of coaching in the past, and I guess the development of the game. So, you know, in terms of their plans, so I've used my business experience here to help them develop a strategic plan for the game based on ICC membership criteria, associate membership. And I guess I've also helped develop contacts at the ICC to help Timor on its journey. So that's kind of where I fit in. I probably came along at the right time for Tayyab and his, you know, and the committee, in terms of just perhaps bringing some of that structure and ability to, you know, to move an organisation forward. So yeah, it's been an exciting 6 months.
And I saw in a stuff.co.nz report that last December you organised a donation of cricket equipment from a bunch of clubs in New Zealand, and last I heard you were trying to organise some shipping for it. So can you maybe update us on that situation and, yeah, how's it all going?
Yeah, well, the good news is it's arrived. So that's the first thing. So, last Christmas, cricket clubs in Wellington, I just put the word out to clubs that I knew in Wellington about what we're trying to do in Timor, and we got an amazing response, over 150 kilograms of cricket gear and VSA, Voluntary Service Abroad, obviously, they paid, they organised some fundraising because the freight wasn't cheap, but DHL came to the party as well, so that was good to reduce the cost. So it actually arrived in Dili probably about 10 days ago, and we had a world record clearance from the customs authorities due to the Timor committee knowing some people, the right people. So we actually got hold of it and even got, I think, some of the news, the national, we made it to the national Timor news, which was kind of good PR for the generosity of the New Zealand cricket community. So we've got, I don't know, 20 odd bat sets of pads, 20 odd cricket bats, 12 helmets, you know, lots of batting gloves, balls, stumps, some shirts with a local cinema in Wellington on it, things like that, which is, I find, quite amusing here in Timor. And stumps, portable scoreboard, crazy catch, portable batting net. And we even got some of those, you know, those glitzy bales that light up when they're hit. I can never remember what they're called.
Zinc bales.
Yeah, but we used them for the first time this morning, but they didn't really make much difference because it was under a scorching 30-degree heat. So I think it'll be better in night matches if we ever get to that stage. But yeah, so that was kind of cool. You know, some people threw in that sort of stuff. So that's a really good thing that we've had it for just over a week. And I can see already, you know, we had a practice this morning, how they're playing and using the net and the crazy catch for the skills. And they've now got equipment, and also the right weight. There's different weights of bats, and as you know, as a batsman, it's important to have the right weight of bat. And some of the Timorese aren't that big, and you know, so it's a long winded way of saying yes, it's arrived, and we're happy.
Fantastic. Yeah. So yeah, and you've already played with it a bit, which is good. Yeah, that's fantastic news. So you've talked a little bit about how you're helping with coaching and strategy. Could you give us a bit of a primer on the structure of cricket in East Timor? So, you know, how many people play, the club structures, how many teams, leagues, that sort of thing?
Well, we're really, Nick, at the start of the journey, right? It's fair to say. We've got over 100 young Timorese playing the game, of which 40% are female, which is great. But most of them, to be fair, have only been playing for a few months, so the standard isn't that flash at the moment. But we had our first competition last December, which was sort of formed, from which we formed four teams to play each other regularly. And facilities are very basic. I mean, I don't think we can claim to have a Timor equivalent of Lords or the MCG just yet. But we've found the ground to practice in Dili thanks to a local Sukho, who is a sort of local chief, who's, I think, heard about it, watched a bit of cricket on ESPN, and so was keen to get his community involved. But we're competing with the pigs and the goats and motorbikes and various other users of the ground. So the grounds here are very dusty, stony. So actually, at the moment, we're actively fundraising the second part of the equipment is for a half-size portable pitch to be sent over from New Zealand, which I think will make a massive difference in terms of, you know, people being able to practice their skills. And it's just very hard at the moment with the sorts of grounds that we're playing on. But, you know, yeah, we're trying to address those things. So I wouldn't say there is a structure in terms of governance structure. There are forming teams. Facilities pretty basic. But we have a plan, and so really at the start of the journey.
So you're looking at implementing a more like a sort of regular league out of those four teams that you mentioned?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, one of the things, for example, ICC Associate Cricket Membership is is to have the eight clubs playing regular cricket. So that's what we're moving towards, and the two grounds, obviously. So that's the plan, to move towards that type of structure. Yeah.
You mentioned that you're sharing the ground with animals and other users. You don't own it, I assume. So what's the, I guess, stability? Because we've seen a lot in associate countries that facilities can be pulled away at a moment's notice. So how are you planning around that?
Yeah, it's been pretty good so far, but I guess that's always a risk. That's true. And we are actively looking for our own ground. The challenge is there isn't a lot of open space in Dili. We may have to go a bit outside Dili. And in fact, one of the we have actually seen an area that could be a potential, but we do need to talk to the government about that. So that's the next thing. But yeah, I agree. It is a risk. But it's just one of those things. Living in a developing country, I guess, that we just have to work through. Yeah.
Yeah, and you just mentioned that the one of the potential spots is a bit outside Dili. Is cricket, I guess, primarily centred in Dili at the moment? And are you looking to expand it outside the capital?
Yeah, it is primarily in Dili. I mean, I think Timor's got about 1.3 million people and 200 or 250,000 live in Dili. So that, you know, it's obviously the major urban area. But we have a team in a place called Emira, which is quite a famous coffee growing area in the hills about an hour outside Dili. And last Sunday, we actually took a team up there for a game, which went really well. The wicket was a dusty path in the middle of a field, but we managed to have a good game and even got a bit of a crowd on the way back from church who stopped to see what was going on. So yeah, there are plans to take it out to the districts like Likasar and Bakau, Alao, a few of the other more provincial towns. But we kind of want to work it out from Dili, if you know what I mean, because that's where the main base is, where the government is, and just start getting some stickability, I suppose, in Dili. But we have got, as I say, an area outside Dili playing and some plans we'd like to take it out to other districts. Fair to say the roads probably need to improve a little bit, which would help to get them to... So, you know, that sort of thing holds us back a little bit. But, yeah, so definitely a plan there, Nick. Yeah.
And you mentioned the Suka, or the local chief, is a big part of the planning and the development, just building relations with the local community and trying to, find a bit of an entry point for the game?
Absolutely. It is all about relationships here in Timor, you know, who you know, and building that sort of trust, if you like. The Suka, I think, saw... potential for his community, just a different game for his community. And it's actually worked out that way. By just practicing down on the field, his community field, we've attracted quite a few local players who've just turned up, watched, got involved. So that's kind of cool, you know? And I think he was quite proud when we had this competition and we managed to get on Timor TV and things like that. So it's good for him in that respect. So, but yeah, relationships are absolutely critical, to building the game here, no doubt about that.
It sort of reminds me of when I was talking to the Philippines guys about their setup, and it's the same sort of thing in that it seems like a lot of what their job is just slowly building up these ground-level community relationships and build the game from there rather than a sort of top-down approach, which you might see with, say, the ICC or, you know, that kind of development.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's probably a combination, to be honest. We need both, right? We need the bottom-up and we need the top-down. But the bottom-up is certainly, if you don't get the bottom-up right here in Timor, you're stuffed, really. So very important, yeah.
So that's the, I guess, the league standard and the more, I guess, dedicated recreational players. What are the plans for bringing in new players from, say, from the schools or just from random people that want to play or that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, we have got four schools playing the game here already in the Dili area, and we are planning to go out to more schools from March onwards to start, you know, encouraging more players. The challenge we have, the main challenge isn't so much demand. We think we can generate demand really quickly. It's more the supply in terms of the equipment, which I know we're addressing, the fields, all that sort of stuff, coaching capacity, you know, all that sort of stuff. So it's just trying to get that balance right. We don't want to push too much to generate too much demand that we can't cope with, if that makes sense. So we've just got to, we've just got to do the two in balance in terms of demand and supply. So, in terms of the supply, actually, we're getting, as well as, a few coaches we're trying to develop in the schools, we have got a few volunteers from New Zealand and Australia now helping out, which has been really good, but they're not going to be here forever. So we've got to make it sustainable, basically, going forward. So, so plans to take it out to more schools. People just turn up and involve them. There's a WhatsApp site for them. There's going to be a website. We've not quite got there yet. So just to bring people together and feel involved, I guess.
So I guess that's what you're up to at the moment. What are perhaps the longer term goals? And where do you kind of see yourselves in a year, in 5 years, in 10 years?
Yeah. Good question. We have to quote from our strategic plan, so our vision is for Timor-Leste to become the newest ICC cricket nation in Asia, with young Timorese people using cricket to grow and fulfill their potential. Okay, so that's our vision. Timor itself is actually the youngest nation in Asia, right? So it's only been independent since 2002, and we want Timor to become the newest ICC cricket nation in Asia, but particularly focus on young people and growing and fulfilling their potential. So that's the vision. We have a mission, obviously, in terms of helping people, ages, levels, all levels, and gender, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know exactly when we will become an ICC associate member. I'm just sure it will happen, but I couldn't really give you a time frame. It will all be dependent on how we go.
So there's no concrete time plan?
Well, I'd like to think in the next 2 years. Yeah, in the next 2 years, we can achieve that. It's a good goal to have, but we have to get this club, have to get the clubs playing. We need to get the grounds sorted and obviously some other ICC criteria, which all makes sense. And we have to make it sustainable, obviously, financially, the game here. So, I'm thinking a couple of years we can have a good chance of doing that. Some people are talking about a year. Personally, I think it's probably more likely 2 years at this stage to give us a good chance of achieving that. And then long term, obviously, it's to grow and start playing some international cricket and with some other associate members and as I say, just develop those young Timorese cricketers and give them, another avenue to pursue to fulfill the potential, really, and see where it goes. Yeah, who knows? I mean, Afghanistan 20 years ago, what an amazing story, in terms of a conflict society similar to Timor. We're sort of using them a bit as our inspiration, but I mean, that might be a long shot, but you've got to aim somewhere.
For sure. You mentioned a little earlier that around half the cricketers that you've got in East Timor are actually women. Are you consciously targeting female players, or are you just sort of trying to get as many as possible? And as a related question, is there an existing culture of women participating broadly in sports, or is it traditionally more of a male thing in East Timor?
It is more of a male-dominated thing. I mean, the main sport here is football. I don't think that many women play. We have got, over 40% of women playing the game at the moment in Timor. Would I say it's a conscious effort? I don't think so. They've just got really interested in it, to be honest. And actually, with other sports being very male-dominated, I really think it could be our differentiator here. I know other emerging cricket nations like Indonesia have got very strong women's games, and I guess some others in the Pacific, PNG and all that sort of stuff. I think it's a major opportunity here in Timor, which is a male-dominated society, but for women to really take, if cricket just lends itself so well to them, and they seem to engage well with it. And there's some very good women cricketers here, I have to say. And the other point is the Cricket Federation are mainly Timorese women who have an athletics background, and they are very keen to attract more women to the game. So kind of right from the committee, literally, I think on the committee there's about 7 members, of which there's only 2 male and 5 women.
And is that related to the Pakistani dentist you mentioned and his wife, the Olympic runner? Is that her influence?
Yes, because I think most of them are athletes, basically. they don't know a lot about cricket, but they're very passionate about Timor and for, you know, and getting Timorese, young Timorese. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's really come from her and her passion and her contacts. So, yeah, it is interesting. So yes, I think women playing cricket here in Timor could be massive. The ingredients are there. Yeah.
And more generally, you mentioned the relationship that you're building and how that's an important part of getting anything going in East Timor. What, I guess, how are you engaging with Timorese culture to try and, yeah, try and promote the sport?
Yeah, that's a really good question. To be honest, I haven't really thought about that specifically. I guess the cricket committee being 100% Timorese, they do seem to know how to get things done in this country, which I wouldn't be able to do, right, as a Malay, we call us Malay, sort of Westerners, if you like. You know, but things like when this equipment arrived, Timorese love a good show, right? And cricket lends itself with all the cricket equipment and paraphernalia that goes with it to this sort of show thing. You know, like we had the TV cameras here when the gear arrived, for example. It made the national news, you know, here in Timor because it was something a bit different and it just looked different. So, I don't know, working directly with Timorese culture, I guess the committee do, just because they are Timorese. I'm not sure I can say much more on that other than that, but it's certainly the committee seem to be able to work it well.
Yeah, sure. And you have mentioned the Timorese history and the, you know, the conflict with Indonesia. I saw a Fairfax article about Harry Moffat, an SAS officer from Australia, and he was using cricket as a means of outreaching with the locals. And I'm sort of wondering how much have the peacekeepers who were stationed in East Timor until pretty recently, how much have they sort of contributed to the game having a bit of a profile?
Yeah, I don't know much about what Harry Moffat did, but I know that the peacekeepers did have games in the early 2000s. I've got a good friend of mine, Martin Dransfield, who was actually one of the commanders of the New Zealand Defence Forces here in the early 2000s, and he talked about the games that were played and the increased awareness and et cetera of the game. In fact, he's actually back in Timor in an advisory role at the moment. And he actually helps out with our Sunday practices, so he's still keeping involved with that. I think it certainly helped in terms of raising awareness, but then it sort of seemed to have dipped for a few years in terms of interest. After the peacekeepers were here mainly between 2000 and 2002, and then they sort of wound down after 2002 or over the next few years. And so I think they all went about 2010, 2012. Yeah, so it's kind of waned a bit, I guess, in that time. But I guess we're just trying to re-energize it. And there's certainly people, Timorese people, that remember the peacekeepers playing, and there may even have few Timorese may have participated in some of those games. So, yeah.
And somewhat related to that, I remember reading that you're trying to assemble a team to compete in a tournament in Indonesia. Given the history with Indonesia, you know, occupying the country for 25 years, do you kind of see the sport as a bit of a healing outlet? A bit like you said you were being inspired by Afghanistan?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. We were hoping to send a team to the Bali Cricket Sixes this April. And I was in Bali last Easter and met a guy called Alan Wilson, who's a bit of a mover and shaker of cricket over there. And he invited us to send a team from Timor. I'm not sure we're actually going to get there this year because of the rising airline prices and, you know, the funding that we need. But, yeah, the Indonesian occupation, yeah, it was 25 years, was particularly brutal. I think nearly one in four Timorese died during that time from the fighting and disease. Yeah, oh, it's massive. Yeah. You know, everyone I work with here will have had some family member, you know, something's happened to some family member. It's amazing, the stories, it really is. But I think it's a credit to both countries that relationships now are very, you know, have improved a hell of a lot. They're good with Indonesia, and there's a real emphasis on reconciliation. I think Indonesia is probably the largest trading partner of Timor now as well. In terms of sport as a healing outlet, absolutely. I'm a great believer sport will always help build bridges, I guess. So it just can't do any harm. That would be cool to actually see a match between Indonesia and Timor-Leste at some point. That would be a very cool thing to see, yeah.
And you've mentioned a couple of times the, I guess, some financial challenges, like the airline prices. What are the resources like for the sport? Because Timor-Leste is among the poorest nations in the world. Yeah, so what resources do you have on the ground that you're using? Where are those resources coming from? And I guess, have you sought additional avenues of funding?
Well, I guess the answer is not enough, because we're trying to address those at the moment. I mean, we have In terms of resources, as I say, just a few local coaches and volunteers from New Zealand, Australian communities helping us. We're looking at funding options to make cricket more sustainable here. And we're about to have discussions with the government, some local companies and some NGOs. And I know other countries, I think like PNG, is it? Have come up with some sort of deal with an Australian aid organisation.
Yes, yeah, they're building a lot of facilities actually, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's really interesting to hear because we'll probably follow up on that. I guess the challenge here, like, is probably like the other developing countries as well, is there's so many competing priorities here, healthcare, education, which is very underfunded. Yeah, so we've got a fair bit of work to do, but we are going to have discussions with, as I say, the government, some local companies. Maybe they can sponsor a team, for example, you know, that type of thing, or a club. And the NGOs. So that's probably one of our biggest challenges, I would say. But the financial side of things will be quite challenging. I think actually we're doing the heavy lifting at the moment almost to get it to the ICC associate membership. I'm not saying it won't be easy once we get there, but I just feel getting from this point, which is pretty, level zero, to ICC associate membership will be where we do most of the heavy lifting, and then hopefully it can get a momentum of its own. So we're very conscious about that, and we're trying our best to address. And I think the government now is quite a bit more stable here than it was a few months ago. So we're hoping, hopefully there'll be more. We can get a good audience with them. And I mean, to be fair, when we had the competition in December, then the Minister of Sport came along. So they showed interest, and we invited them along. So again, I think it's just about having the right conversations. But that is a priority for us in the next few weeks, actually. Yeah.
And I guess another sort of related question is that traditionally cricket's quite an expensive sport to play with, all the equipment and the facilities that you need. Obviously, you're bringing over that gear from New Zealand and you're trying to source some more, but that looms as a challenge. So what are you going to do to try and address that?
Yeah, that is a challenge in terms of making the game affordable, especially, and as you mentioned earlier, Timor being one of the poorest countries in the world. Some of the players, for example, can't afford a phone to communicate with them, or even 25 cents for the microlite journey to training, things like that. So we're talking about some really fundamental challenges in a game, in a country like Timor. But I guess it just goes back to trying to get those funding streams from a variety of sources. And we're actively, there's a guy here we're talking to in Timor who's very good at fundraising and sorting out those sort of financial models, and we're actively talking to him in terms of helping us at the moment. So yeah, there's a few opportunities there, but not underestimating the challenges on that one. Yep.
You mentioned earlier that you're talking about, that the strategic vision talks about using cricket to fulfill potential. And you mentioned in that article I read that cricket is giving these people some purpose. So, yeah, could you maybe elaborate on these kind of ideas that you've got going?
Sure. Well, I guess my role here, my official volunteer role, I'm not doing cricket stuff, is advising the government on attracting foreign investment and creating jobs. I mean, there's 80% of the GDP of Timor is oil and gas related. So they have to diversify. That's a finite resource. So everyone agrees that's what we need to do. And Timor being the youngest country in Asia, it's actually got an average age of 18. So there's a hell of a lot of growing bubble of young people who will need work in the next few years. And a lot of young people, not enough work is not a particularly good combination. So cricket is a really good outlet for them to give them that sense of purpose, that sense of hope that they can do something different, that they can maybe represent their country one day. They're very proud people. And if you can give them that sort of hope, that sense of purpose, I've already seen the difference that's made to some of our players who come from, some pretty challenging backgrounds. So, that's amazing. I just love seeing that. That's very rewarding. Yeah. So that's kind of what I meant about giving them a sense of purpose in a country where there isn't a lot of opportunity right now for a lot of the young people. Yeah.
It reminds me a bit of talking to Evan McCall about Philippines cricket, and he mentioned how the spirit of cricket and the values around that concept put cricket as a bit different, and it was a bit of a unique selling point to draw people to the game. And it sounds like you're finding something a bit similar as you're trying to draw people to cricket and, yeah, as you say, fulfill their potential.
Yeah, I think so. That's really interesting about Philippines cricket. Totally agree, by the way. Yeah, we've just initiated a Spirit of Cricket Award in Timor Cricket, and, you know, really trying to stress to the players, it's how you play rather than what you achieve. What you achieve is obviously important, but it's also critical about how you play. And I don't know whether this is a parallel or not, but given what these people have been through, they've been occupied 450 years by the Portuguese, Japanese and Indonesians. The spirit of cricket kind of aligns well with their path of reconciliation they've chosen to follow here. Amazingly resilient people with a great spirit, you know, for life and fun. And cricket reflects these values really well, as far as I can see. And So there's a really good match there, Nick. Yeah, a really good match.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And kind of wrapping up, what would you say has been your proudest moment or achievement with cricket in East Timor?
Okay, right. I think that's pretty easy. So we had this competition back in December, which was the first one in Timor, this cricket tournament. And just at the end, there were just tears of joy from the players, coaches, administrators, spectators. It was just very humbling. You know, national anthems playing and all this sort of stuff. They all had, all these young teams had gear, you know, kits, had the right playing stuff on. And I'm in my mid-50s now, and I think, yeah, this has been one of the most rewarding things I've done in my life. So I feel very privileged to have had this opportunity, really. So, definitely that tournament back in December was, you know, like the yay moment. This is cool. This is cool. Yeah, the stars are aligning. So, probably that, really.
One final question, maybe. What can we on the outside do to support you? Like, is there a website we can find for, you know, donating gear or, you know, that sort of thing?
Yeah. I have to say, I should mention the ICC. They have been very supportive of what we've been doing here. So Jane and Rob in Melbourne, and also Will, I think, who's the sort of general, the ICC Global Development Manager. You know, they've all been really, really supportive. And in fact, we actually got some kit from Australia as well that Jane and Rob helped organise. So that was fantastic. So I feel like we are getting, you know, good support from the ICC, but we really do need some funds for some more things like this portable cricket pitch, right, which is just going to make a massive difference. So if anyone wants to make any contribution, they just need to go to vsa.org.nz. Am I allowed to plug this? Is that okay?
Oh, yeah, sure.
On here. This is a site to link into. So this is the Voluntary Service Abroad site, where people can donate, just a little bit of money, just a few dollars or whatever they feel they can afford to do. So if you go onto vsa.org.nz, and it's easy to see a fundraising for cricket in Timor-Leste, and there's a site there you can just donate a bit of money to. So that's something that would be great.
Well, we'll include a link to that in the, when we put the podcast up too.
Perfect. That'll be fantastic, Nick. Appreciate that. So I think we are getting quite a lot of support, like Indonesian cricket and the ICC. We just got a long journey. That's all. It's just the start of a long journey, but you got to start somewhere. And I really think the ingredients are here, and it can be an amazing opportunity for some of these young Timorese people. So, and appreciate your interest and your support. Yeah,
no worries. Thanks a lot for joining us, Mark.
You're welcome. Been a pleasure. We enjoyed it. And anything we can do to spread the word on Timor cricket, yeah, more than happy to do.